Hello and welcome to From the Rooker End, an FA Cup from the Rooker End, one that we always adore. My name is John. With me today is Michael.
Well, you say we always adore it. We haven't adored it since the FA Cup semi-final against Wolverhampton Wanderers, which before this afternoon was the last time Watford won in the FA Cup.
Yeah, I had that stat thrown at me by Mr. Ollie Wicken, who, by the way, is the only person I've seen here today who wanted Watford to draw. I think he fancied a trip up to the new Chesterfield Stadium to tick off a box. Jason's also here.
Good afternoon. Magic of the Cup.
Yep, all that. We love a bit of Magic of the Cup. I suppose it wasn't a magical game, Michael, but definitely felt like a more purposeful game for Watford in terms of our intentions compared to many third-round games we've seen over the last 10 years.
There was definitely a bit of magic in the air. To see that away end so full, I think just under 4,000 Chesterfield fans made the trip, were determined to make the most of it, and absolutely did. Noisy throughout. Obviously, they're top of the National League and loving life. So that, I loved that. Seeing a mass, big, full away end is absolutely brilliant. And kind of, let you into a little secret, I kind of hoped they'd score and us go on to win it, just to see that sort of,
reaction.
I love to see it. It's one of the great sights, limbs, as the youth call it these days. And they got that in the Vicarage Road end, and Watford went on to win. So I think there's enough cup magic there today that certainly for us that we could get out of it. But I think the main talking point at 2 o'clock was obviously the strength of the side. Mm. There was very few changes that weren't enforced. I think we knew Backman was going to come in for Hamer to give him a game. But that was a very, very strong side, and easy to see why. On one hand, Watford haven't got many sort of, they haven't got a B team, they haven't got reserves, they haven't got a vast well of excess players they can use. And also, Valerian Ismail was obviously keen to keep the momentum going and keep this, what they've lacked in results in the past sort of 4 or 5 games, they have made up for in spirit and belief. And I think he wanted to keep that going. Nearly fell down. But ultimately, right at the end, we saw that effort, that belief, keep going, don't panic. They obviously didn't play well, but ultimately they got the job done. So vindicated in that decision to play the strong side. And yeah, ultimately we're coming away. It's a bit damp, but we've all got a spring in our step, haven't we? And before we move on to look at the match in a little bit more detail, just wanted to mention the way that the club does this Graham Taylor match day. They've hit upon a really poignant and impressive way of marking this really important day. By the way, I can't believe it's been 7 years already. Quite incredible. But the sight of all those scarves going up this afternoon at Vicarage Road it looks amazing. It looks absolutely beautiful, and it's a lovely moment, I think, where everyone comes together and we know what we're remembering, who we're remembering, and why we're remembering it. And I think the club has hit upon a really, really excellent way of marking what is an important day. And that was a beautiful thing. So we talked about the Chesterfield fans joined in, the juxtaposition of the blue and yellow. It all looked absolutely superb. But I think well done to the club for finding this way of marking Graham's sort of life and legacy so simply but beautiful. I was in the Sir Elton John stand today, so I can see the rookery. You guys are underneath all those scarves. Yeah. It looks magnificent. It really, really does look great. So credit to the club for organising that, and credit to the supporters who come out. Everyone walking past us, you can see the scarves. Not everyone likes to wear a scarf for whatever reason. They all came out today. It's a great sight and another lovely, magical moment.
Yeah, I think FA Cup third round for me, what I didn't know, I never liked about it recently, let's say, since Manchester United did their thing in the late 90s. It doesn't feel like we could stand here and talk about a bunch of players who we know aren't going to do anything in the next couple of weeks because they're all young players getting their debuts. But actually, Jason, there was a number of players in there who, yeah, we've seen them recently, but we're sort of given a chance. So that's what I want to try and figure out in this podcast. Mm. Who and what performances do we think we are going to take forward and to become a thing for Watford this season? Who for you do you think has done the best job in terms of cementing themselves?
Even before the goal, I thought Tom Dele-Bashiru was... I'm not sure if standout's the right word, but I think he was probably one of our better players.
Well, he was playing the Kiembe role today.
He started at right back again. Mm. And to be honest, when Andrews came on, I thought, OK, yeah, that's a good move, get Andrews on at right back. I didn't think he had as good a game as he has done recently. I thought he struggled a bit today.
In what way?
I think both defensively he looks a bit out of position, a bit out of sorts at times. His sort of marker running past him quite easily one or two times, gave the ball away as well on a couple of occasions. He wasn't the sort of performance we'd come to expect from Andrews, and obviously we have to remember he's still quite a young player, not long since he's broken into the side, so we probably will get that from time to time. So I thought that, yeah, the performance from Dele Bashir at right back was probably better than his in the first half. But when he moved into central midfield in the second half, I thought we saw a good performance. Probably helped him that there was sort of space for him to exploit, that he carried the ball really well, and a lot of our attacks, to be fair to Chesterfield, they didn't just sit back and sort of let us attack. They did try and go for the second goal when they had the opportunities to. So when we were coming away and sort of counter-attacking their attacks, it always seemed to be Dele Bashir who was sort of carrying us forward, and he'd sort of more often than not make the right choice, make the right decision, make the right pass. Were one or two where he didn't. I think that might have been more a spree of rolling around on the floor feeling he got fouled and he didn't have an out on the left, so had to do more himself. But generally, yeah, good performance from Dele Bashir, I thought, today.
It was interesting. One of the changes that we thought we knew would happen was Backman coming in for Hamer. And I'm going to sort of be a little bit critical of Backman here, but also need to caveat it. He hasn't played football since being away at Leicester City, where he got sent off. He's been sat drumming his fingers, being desperate to get back into the side. He came back in, and you think, well, okay, that doesn't weaken us in any way. But I did feel Watford started the game really well. Down the flanks, they were finding a lot of joy. Obviously, the pace of Asprea in particular was opening Chesterfield up down the right. Weren't quite able to capitalise on it. We had two big chances, mainly down to mistakes from Chesterfield giving up possession. And it did feel like, OK, Chesterfield are obviously a decent side, and they are. They are league, never mind League Two. I think they'd probably hold their own in League One. They are a decent side. But Backman made a couple of errors. There was one where the ball came down the left and it was obviously his to come and claim, and he didn't. And that can be down to a little bit of lack of confidence, bit of match rustiness.
It was a loss of confidence. And I think if he'd played that first half at the Vicarage Road end, he wouldn't have had like the straight on him, away. There was a lot of negativity towards him, understandably why, but it wouldn't have helped him in his mindset.
No, and then I think quickly after that there were a couple of skewed clearances and the distribution was poor from him. That was only the real patch when you noticed him, but I think what it did signify was a change in momentum, and that's when we felt like we were in the ascendancy. We'd fluffed our chances that we had been gifted us, really, but it did feel like a matter of time. And then that happened, and it just felt like Chesterfield thought, well, actually, we could get at them.
Chesterfield were okay, so those first sort of 20 minutes or so, they looked okay, and not overawed, but they always lacked that bit of quality to do something. They'd maybe make a couple of passes and then the next pass would go astray, and we were then able to sort of dominate possession. When we got the ball, we might lose it again they'd try and do something and just wouldn't get the final ball right, or not achieve what they were trying to achieve. And like Mike said, it was that sort of shift of momentum that they seemed to pick up a little bit, and all of a sudden the passes were hitting for them, and the goal, that was a good bit of centre forward play. I thought the guy got the crossing, but great sort of drop off his man. I think Sierra was marking Quigley, wasn't it, that got the goal. And he just sort of dropped off him, lost him to the back post, no one anywhere near him. Simple task, just nodding the ball into the back of the net.
Yeah. Anyone else, Michael? Let's go. Maybe we talked a little bit there about Andrews. I think Morris had a very good game.
Yep.
I thought, again, a classic player, played some games of football week in, week out. He's getting back, he's getting some sort of form, and didn't get any cramp this week, which is always quite nice. But up front, Yasser on one side, Martins on the other side. Two players that we know have played, but two players we know have got replacements, let's say. They're not cemented in those places. Did either of those push on or maybe fluff their lines?
Yeah, no, I don't think either of them did push on. I think James Morris deserves praise before we move on. What he never does is never lets Watford down.
No.
And that's, for a defender, that's decent. I did worry about Sieralta and Hurt falling into the trap of getting bullied and beaten up and sucked into a bit of an unnecessary scrap. Hurt lost his rag and got yellow carded, and you don't need that. You need to avoid that. So, ironically, the younger head was the calmer head when it came to it in the defence. But as for does Asprea need to advance his credibility, his credentials at the club? Not really. He's always going to be, if not the first name on the team sheet, certainly up there.
But there was a moment early in the first half where he was getting past his man, and he was doing it consistently, ball over the top. He was ahead, he was there, and he never really pushed himself to do that. I didn't feel like he was always deep, he was always wide, and he'd always stop. Even in the second half, he still lacks that massive decision making problem.
That's
he's
exactly
not
it.
Making any of those decisions at the right time to the right places. Hold on for that split second too long where he can't do it.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right, John. I think that his decision making is his letdown. He always wants to take another touch or take on another man instead of just keeping it simple, perhaps playing a 1-2, keeping the ball moving, being a little bit more dynamic. He tries to do too much ultimately, and whilst we've given Chesterfield credit where it's due, but a player like him should be too good for them.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but
it did seem that way.
It did initially, but did he run them ragged?
No.
And yes, they're well organised. Yes, they're a confident side. Yes, they're doing well and will be promoted and will do well in League Two. So yada yada yada. But we want to see more from our best players. So I think you can sum it up perfectly with what you said. Decision making is skew-iff when it comes to Asprilla, and it stops him being that absolute elite level, really really great player. On the other side, and I'll let Jace take over, but I thought Mateus Martins, what did you get from him, really? And I don't know if either of you can answer it, but a game like this should be one where he is like right licking his lips. And I think the first half in particular, the whole side, bar perhaps Livermore and perhaps Morris, were too complacent. You could see Livermore stomping around, trying to wind everyone up. They thought they were going to run through him. They thought they were going to walk through him. It obviously didn't happen, and you know what it's like when you realise that it's not going to happen, it's too late.
Yeah.
But I thought Martins didn't let himself down, but this would have been a real opportunity for him to say, right, look, there's still lots of games coming up, we've got Tuesday nights, whatnot, consider me. And for me, he's just a bit wallpaper.
Yeah. It was sort of summed up the Watford performance really generally. It was lethargic, sort of, certainly the first half, lethargic and a bit cliche, but it just felt like they thought they could turn up and do the job. We don't see Asprilla and Martin start that often together, I don't think, do we, if you look back?
No.
And I don't know if I was worried or concerned particularly. I thought, I looked at it today, I thought, okay, here's a chance to go out and attack them, to make Chesterfield think about having to defend and not turn up and sort of attack us and bully us. If we've got two skillful players that are going to run at players and going to cause problems on both sides of the pitch, they'll have to work hard defensively. And
do you think that's them or Val?
Do
you think it was their choices, or was it maybe something Val had told them?
Well, Val picks a team, but I mean, he wouldn't have told them to go out half-assed, which is what it felt like in the first half. And we talk about Asprilla, you said he was making good things happen in terms of getting beyond his marker and finding space and inviting balls over the top and running onto those, trying to make something happen. We didn't even get that from Martins. So up the left hand side, it was quite samey. It was balls, it sort of Sierra would sort of lay the ball out to Morris would look for something, Martins would be standing in front of him on the touchline. He'd just have to sort of give it to feet, and his marker was on him straight away and nicking the ball off him more often than not. Sometimes he'd get away from his man because he's got that bit of quality and he'd sort of cut inside, but then the quality of the pass from there on in wasn't always great. So yeah, it should have been better. It should have been an opportunity for Martin today, and he didn't
biggest opportunity. Yeah, biggest opportunity, I suppose, in some ways, Mike, is the fact that Healy got to start, which I think last time he started, probably the League Cup away at Stevenage, maybe? I can't remember. I was not expecting him to turn around and put performance where we're all going to go, man, Healy has to start. But you want to see a bit more from him. You want him to have more minutes. You want him to develop as a player. Do you think he added enough or anything?
Well, first and foremost, we'll have to wait and see how bad his injury was, because he looked like he sort of hyperextended his knee. He tried to knock the skin off the ball, didn't he? He was actually called off offside. Geordie was watching. Yeah. I don't know how he does it, but he managed to find
Spain. Yeah.
He managed to find a stream, and he said he wasn't offside. But he tried to leather it and kind of missed the ball, and it looked like straight away he went down, and he was saying substitution straight away. It did look like there was some debate as to whether he could carry on, but I think that was more about relaying the details back to the bench that they needed to make three subs instead of the two they had lined up. So we wait with bated breath, really, to see what the impact of that injury, because whilst Rajovic did really well when he came on to score a goal, attacked the ball at the near post, did exactly what we wanted him to do.
And involved in the second goal, held the ball up.
Yeah, the thing that we've all said he can't do, he's useless.
Baby steps, boys, baby steps.
Yeah, so fair play to Rajovic, but we don't really want to be going into the next month with only him. And obviously Baye will be back after he's served two matches now, has he?
Yeah.
So he'll be back after QPR, which is good. But we have such a paucity of striking options that losing Healy would be a bit of a blow. What I liked about him is he's determined. I like that low centre of gravity. He's got quick feet. He's skillful. He can turn. He's something that we haven't really seen much of in that attacking position. He's clearly desperate to score. He's clearly desperate to do well. But I think he probably suffered, like the whole of the side, like I mentioned earlier, once you realise you've been sleepwalking into the game a little bit, then you chase it and it all starts to feel like it's slipping away from you. I think another one who suffered in that regard was Chakvetadze. They were trying to make it happen. And I think Healy was trying to make it happen. Chakvetadze was trying to make it happen. And as a result, it was all a bit harem scarem. So I don't think any of them will be going straight into the office and saying, can I get a DVD of that game to show my loved ones, wherever they are in the country or the world. I think they'll all feel like they could have done significantly better. Healy's he showed glimpses. But what you need a striker to do is score. He had that chance. He fluffed it. So ultimately, did he do what he's put on the pitch to do? No, even if it was offside, you'd like to see him drill it into the bottom left from there, because it just didn't happen and he snatched at it. And that tends to happen, I guess, when you're really reaching for it and trying to make an impact and you feel the game slipping away. But there's definitely signs there. He's not a complete dud, definitely not, I don't think.
I just feel like he's a second striker. I just feel like he'd be much better suited playing alongside another striker. You could see, like you said, that the energy was there. He was dropping deep quite a lot to try and get the ball and get involved in the game. I thought his best moment of the game was, I think we were already 1-0 down at the time, and he's come back to make a tackle on the edge of our penalty area. Really good tackles. Won the ball and then won a free kick as a striker went into the back of him. But it was a tough day at the office, just because I think playing the way we play, I don't think suits him, to be honest.
But the answer, Michael, is Jorge Hurtado. What was the question?
Yeah, I think we were excited to see him because obviously...
Always excited to see a new young player coming on, always, but...
Yeah, I think he probably suffered from the state of the game when he came on. It was frantic. Watford were desperate to get back into the game. It was fast-paced. It was... The ball was flying out at him. He looked a little bit unsure. Yeah, I think he struggled to make an impact until, of course, he played a part in the...
Yeah, got the assist.
He did. So when it counted, he was there. And I think the same goes for everyone. This is one to get through. This is one to get through. We got through unscathed in terms of the scoreline. We'll wait and see what happened with Reece Healy. We've now got... the QPR game is on Sunday, which is probably another reason why he felt able to play the first 11. I think Hurtado, that'll do him the power of good in understanding what it's going to be like out there in the Championship, because that was, for all intents and purposes, a Championship game, really, in terms of the sort of the pace and the physicality of it. So yeah, I felt a bit sorry for him, really. The game passed him by, balls were coming at him sort of waist height, chest height, shin height, and he looked a bit sort of unsure but he played his part. So yeah, he'll get that little AWS next to him, next to his name in the stats.
And, that's
yeah,
a bit harsh.
Yeah, well, yeah. I can't be too over the top with my praise. You know that, Jace. You've got to every silver lining has a cloud when it comes to me. But yeah, so glad to see. He's one of those. He's sort of like, oh yeah, we've got him. And you want to see that they're real. It's actually nice to see him in a yellow shirt.
He wasn't a hologram being projected.
Yeah, well, speaking of sort of a hologram, sort of, I was going to sort of just at the end of the game tweet unlucky font, because it's the first time Watford have gone with their own cup font, haven't they? But it's got 100% win rate, so yeah, that tweet will have to wait probably for about 30 years, I guess.
Yeah, we'll do a bit of preview about the QPR game in a minute, but next, of course, because Watford are through in the FA Cup, we've got a bunch of memories from lots of Watford fans who sent us their stories this week. But into the fourth round, Michael, que sera, sera, whatever will be.
A podcast made by Watford fans, for Watford fans, from the Rookery End.
For this part of the podcast, we wanted to find and hear some of the Watford fans' favourite FA Cup moment. A lot of them are when we beat a certain team. A lot of them are about when we've done really well. A lot of them are about their first. Let's hear Mike's first experience of the FA Cup.
There's a bit of discussion actually in my house as to whether this was my first ever Watford game. I don't think it was, but this is the first one I can remember in any sort of detail. And when I tell you what it is, that'll probably become clear why it's so etched in my memory. And it was a Tuesday night in the 86-87 season in FA Cup replay against Walsall. And I remember I'd have been 9 at the time, turning up. It was certainly my first night game as a Watford supporter, as a football supporter. So the first time I'd seen those towering floodlights lighting up Vicarage Road. And I just remember the place seeming so big, so vibrant, so full, so noisy, so exciting. The Vicarage Road end was just a seething mass of humanity. I seem to remember Walsall brought a decent amount too, so the Rookery end was pretty busy. Looking back, almost certainly wasn't, but the pitch just felt that different shade of green, so bright. And I just remember standing there feeling just so excited throughout. And obviously that was helped by the nature of the game. It ended 4-4. What I realised even at that early age was the beauty of cup football. It had that extra little crackle, because you know if you make a mistake or you don't take your chance and you lose the game, you're out for another year. And a year is a long time a year is a long time, especially when you're a 9-year-old kid. So the thought of going out of the cup, of that chance disappearing, Watford were in the First Division at the time and would go on that season to go to the FA Cup semi-final, which I also went to, my first away game, which we won't talk about, the defeat against Spurs. That frisson in the air, that feeling of extra excitement that cup football can bring. And I think that's when I fell in love with not just football, not just Watford, but cup football. That just knowing how important it was, how special it was, what it could deliver, and that the fact that that game was just such end-to-end entertainment it was just unbelievable for an open-mouthed 9-year-old like me. It was a phenomenal evening, and one I've watched back countless times on YouTube, but I'll be forever grateful for my dad for taking me that Tuesday night. I don't know what it was that would have made him take us that Tuesday night, me and my brother, who would have been 7 or 8 at the time. We didn't go to evening matches routinely, but we went to that one, and I'll be forever grateful that I was there. My first FA Cup tie, my first FA Cup fixture with Watford, and what a game it was. Watford 4, Walsall 4, an absolute belter. The night I fell in love with cup football.
Oh, we can imagine a young Michael Parkin moaning about something in that 4-4 draw. Maybe not, maybe. He did enjoy the game and it was his first. Colin's first experience of a game was actually quite a while before Mike's, in the late 60s, when Watford took on Manchester United.
The first cup memory I have, obviously, is my first game, which was the fourth round of the cup in 68-69. So I was 6, I think. And I was dragged all the way to Old Trafford to watch a 1-1 draw. Scully and scored a wonder goal. I don't remember much about it because it's all very hazy and very tired. But I do remember my brother, who's 7 years older than me, bursting into tears after we scored. Because my mum said to him, "Why are you crying?" And he said, "Because we're not going to win. They're going to equalise." And they did. And then came to Vicarage Road and Bobby Charlton put 2 past us. I can't say I remember a great deal about it being so young. But obviously, in hindsight, it was a very special event for Watford. One of the biggest games in their history to date.
Watford's first foray into the semi-finals of the FA Cup came a couple of years after that in 1970, where we lost 5-1 to Chelsea at White Hart Lane. Of course, that year we did actually become one of the only teams to play in a third-place playoff. We lost, unfortunately, to Manchester United, but hey, it's a bit of history. The most historic run for Watford probably came in 1984, and it's when Jason got his first memory as a Watford fan in the FA Cup.
Whenever you mention the FA Cup and sort of the thinking of the halcyon days of the FA Cup, I always go back to the 80s. I could probably tell you the result of every single FA Cup final in the 1980s. Obviously, Watford were in one of them, but I'd certainly remember the rest as well as a young kid growing up. Unsurprisingly, my outstanding memory is from the 1984 season, but perhaps not one of the games you'd think of. And I went to the replay at home to Luton, 4-3 under lights. That was pretty special. But the one I'm going to pick is the quarter-final tie away at Birmingham. It was my first proper away game as a Watford fan, so that already was pretty special. I had been to see us play at Norwich, but that was a bit of a cheat because I went up with my dad and my granddad, and we stayed with my Uncle Ted, who was a massive Norwich City fan, and we sort of went with him in the home end. So I was in amongst Norwich supporting people, not Watford fans, so that doesn't really count. So this was my first proper Watford away day with Watford fans, and St Andrews was massive, bigger than Vicarage Road. And I remember, it's funny what you remember about these things, but being an FA Cup game, you're quite excited already. I was only 10 years old. Travelling up the M1 in my dad's car, already at the excitement building, and then sort of get to St Andrews, and they had that massive terrace that sort of went round sort of where the away end was, and then went all the way round to the sort of down the side of the pitch. And just this huge, full of people, vast numbers of people, would have been easily the biggest attendance that I'd have been to any game at the time. But somehow we managed to find a sort of, we were on the edge of sort of where the Watford fans were, so we managed to find a bit of space. So certainly compared to the semi-final, when I went to Villa Park after that, I only saw about half the game because in the packed whole end, as a 10-year-old, you can't see above all the head, so could only see when the ball was up in the air or sort of the far end of the pitch. Whereas for this game, I could see everything that was going on. And of course, that meant seeing that special goal from John Barnes, still my favourite Watford goal of all time, that one. We were in that corner where he was on the edge of the box when he beat those defenders and then just seemed to loop it, but with a bit of pace on it past the great Tony Coton, who was still at Birmingham at the time. Just for me, again, sort of growing up, supporting Watford through those years, it just felt like we could achieve anything. And it almost felt normal. We were definitely on top first half. Second half, we sort of had to weather a storm a bit. And I do remember feeling, oh, this one won't go away. And then all of a sudden, we sort of got up the other end and bagged a couple of goals towards the end of the game. And again, as a sort of excitable 10-year-old, just realising the sort of momentum of the occasion, we're now going to an FA Cup semi-final. And again, for me, those days were special days. I don't know if people feel the same about them these days, being played at Wembley. But they were special. They were sort of Saturday afternoon games, going on at the same time as the league games, but played at neutral venues with sort of grounds filled half and half with fans of both teams. Extra time if needed. They always seemed to be in the sunshine. That probably wasn't always the case, but that's how my childhood memories remember them, watching them on Match of the Day or the big match afterwards. And now Watford were going to be going to one thanks to this wonderful victory at Birmingham City. As a young lad, it really meant sort of everything at the time, just everything that it meant to me, the big crowd, my first away trip, and the fact that Watford were going to the semi-final and I was going to go and get a chance to see them perform in front of thousands, and who knows from where they would go from then on at that point. Well, we know what happened in the end, but less said about that, the better. Birmingham 1, Watford 3, what a day.
Sharing the FA Cup with family and football generally comes up quite a lot on From the Rookery End, and it will do on this little homage to the FA Cup. Stu Hutchinson's story comes in the late 80s.
We were drawn away at Coventry at their old Highfield Road ground. I'd spent the 80s going with my dad on the train to watch Watford's very best years. But now, at the age of 15 or so, I wanted to go with my mates. They were all going, the whole gang from school, they were all going to Coventry together. My dad, either aware of Coventry's reputation or, like I am now with my oldest son, just wanting to keep the bond going, insisted I went with him. Now, the leader, sort of the leader of our sort of school gang, was a lad who was a bit of a goth and dressed up like Robert Smith of The Cure, the big hair up on end, the clothes. And yes, on occasion, the makeup as well. We won 1-0 at Coventry. Trevor Senior with probably his only ever goal for Watford. And naturally, at full-time, it all kicked off. I remember feeling grateful, safe under the wing of the protective wing of my dad as we sat on the bus waiting to take us back to the train station. I looked out the window and saw these Coventry skinheads chasing Robert Smith of The Cure, or so it seemed, down the road, followed by a whole gang of my schoolmates and loads of other Watford fans who looked like they were going to get the kick in of their lives. And I found out on Monday morning that some of them did. So I've never been more grateful to go with my dad one more time to the game.
The 1990s were not a very good time for Watford in the FA Cup. If we won a few games and got through a few rounds, because we were starting in the first round. And John Good remembers one specific goal from a first round game in 1996.
Probably got to be Northampton Town away, absolutely freezing day. Me and Dad went along. I think it was a pretty dull game up until like later in the second half, when Darren Baisley scored an absolute screamer of a goal. That one sticks in my memory. Came back after the game and had a cold, but it was worth it just to see that game.
And Kevin Affleck, though, remembers one of those very early 90s games.
One of my earliest memories with Watford in the FA Cup was the 1991 4-1 third round defeat to the mighty Shrewsbury Town. I remember that one well. There wasn't so much magic of the FA Cup that day. And I remember just the silence was deafening in the car on the way home with my dad from that one. Fortunately, there was no social media that day. Can you imagine the overreaction to that one if that defeat happened now?
But Kevin's favourite Watford memory comes in the FA Cup semi-final run that we had in 2007, the quarter-final away at Plymouth.
I remember Home Park was absolutely jumping, and Ian Holloway got his mob right up for that one. I think they had Ebanks, Blake, Dan Gosling, Scott Sinclair. I think they were in the Championship at that point and we were in the Premier League, although in the Premier League by the skin of our teeth. Yeah, I remember Hammer Brazza put us in front early on with that sledgehammer of his left foot, and then it was the Ben Foster show. He made save after save after save that night. He was extraordinary, but if only he'd have had the foresight to put the GoPro in the goal that night. God, that would have been some footage from that game, because he was outstanding. I think Boothroyd said afterwards he'll be the best goalkeeper in the world. Now, we know Boothroyd was prone to hyperbole, but he didn't turn out to be bad, Foster, did he? Perhaps not the best in the world, but he had a fairly decent career. But even Boothroyd said afterwards Holloway must be gutted after that one, and he was right, because Plymouth should have won that one. Watford dodged a bullet there. It was so much of a heist. I think it should have been on Crime Watch, that one, but we had the dubious reward for that one was playing the mighty Manchester United in the semi-final, and that was a great Manchester United team, so and we know how that one played out.
And Andy Lewis has a certain memory lodged in his brain of an FA Cup tie that fortunately he missed after that Plymouth win.
So one of my lasting memories of Watford in the FA Cup doesn't actually involve me being at a game at all, and I remember it because I missed a very important game. It's the 14th of April 2007, where Watford were taking on Manchester United in the FA Cup semi-final at Villa Park. I was 14 at the time, and unfortunately this game happened to clash with my grandparents' 50th wedding anniversary, which had obviously been in the diary for 50 years prior, so there was no getting out of it. So there we were in this village hall, which had been set up for friends and family gathering, all arriving in their very smart attire. And there I was at the front table in my Watford shirt, demerit on the back, with a Watford flag hanging proudly on the side. Had a lovely dinner, went back home to watch the game unfold. But I'd be lying if I said there wasn't a little part of me that kind of wishes I was there that day to experience it.
Legendary games in the FA Cup do not always come in a semi-final, in a final, in a quarter-final. Sometimes they can be after a very long trip up north to Sunderland. Here's Ollie Wicken.
My most magnificent away trip was Sunderland away in the FA Cup in 2003. We flew up from Heathrow, which made it special, then we went to a pub on the quayside in Newcastle, where we met a very drunk Newcastle player who'd had the pub opened early for him. After the pub, we caught the metro out to Sunderland. It was unusual. There was a 10-year-old girl pole dancing in our carriage. Then there was the game. Sunderland battered us, but we won with a twice-taken penalty by Tommy Smith, both of which Tommy admits were truly terrible. So it was a hilarious giant killing. Then we flew home again on a plane full of horns, singing Heide Helgesen songs all the way. Heide, 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 Heide Helgesen. all the way through the skies from Sunderland back to London. An unbeatably fun day.
Family dedication can cause you to miss out on certain things as a Watford fan, but also having that family with you, as we've already discussed, can be an amazing thing. Now, Colin had his first game a long time ago, but the FA Cup gave a chance for him to go for the first time with both his girls. And in fact, his youngest girl, this was her first ever game. I don't think she'll be forgetting it, but not for good reasons.
The big memory, and it's not a very memorable game, it was in 2011, and it was the fourth round, and it was against Brighton at home. And it was Lily, my youngest daughter's first game. And it was one of the coldest days I can remember ever going to a football match. And Lily was dressed up, was layer after layer, and she had this brown puffer jacket. She looked like Kenny out of South Park. And she was all right. She had gloves, and I had a jacket on and gloves, but it was absolutely freezing. We were in the lower Graham Taylor stand, or as it was called then, the Sir Stanley Rouse. And but Florence was really struggling. She was all skin and bone. We'd put loads of clothes on her, but she was just starting to shake. Her lips started to turn blue about 35 minutes into the game. And at half-time, being a good parent, at nil-all. Anyway, I decided that it was too dangerous. She was too cold. She was in danger of getting hypothermia. So I said, right, we're going home. And we got up and we left the ground up at the Vicarage Road end. We walked along to Friday's. She was shivering, you know, like someone who's just been dragged out of a freezing cold river. And we went into Friday's and I got some chips. I thought maybe she just needs something hot inside her, maybe a cup of tea or something. Anyway, I got these chips and she just took off her gloves and she stuck her hands into the chips because her hands were so cold. And we walked back to the Watford Girls' School and got in the car and turned the heating right up and went home. But it was a memorable cup game. So I think it was Flo's first ever cup game and it was Lily's first ever game. It was so, so cold. And Brighton, of course, went on to score a goal in the second half and beat us 1-0. So not a memorable game from a Watford perspective, but a memorable family event for us.
We've already discussed that quarter-final where Watford scraped through against Plymouth. And I do love a quarter-final. I do remember that wonderful goal from Stephen Glass in 2003, where we made it to the semi-final after beating Burnley. It was a great day at Vicarage Road. I always remember a brilliant day at Vicarage Road. We beat Crystal Palace. We got through to the semi-final to take on Wolves. My favourite bit about that entire tie was that we could have given Crystal Palace the entire Vicarage Road end, but we didn't. And they couldn't make enough noise, and the Hornets went on and off to Wembley. But the other quarter-final that lives very, very long in many memories is that away game at Arsenal in 2016. Adam Drury.
One of my favourite ever games is the 2-1 quarter-final win at Arsenal in 2016. Arsenal won the cup in 2014, 2015 and 2017. The only team to beat them in a four-year period were Watford. I remember feeling very proud of that. And it felt to me when the final whistle went, it felt like we'd won the FA Cup.
Yeah, it's Kieran's favourite as well. Here he tells us detail about that quarter-final at the Emirates.
Under Kike Sanchez Flores, it was obviously our first season in the Premier League under the Pozzos. We'd had a good first half of the campaign, but I think like we saw in a number of our Premier League seasons, the wheels kind of came off a little bit in the second half of the season. But the cup run was something that kind of kept us going that season. And we went to Arsenal, who were the holders of the competition. They'd won the FA Cup the previous two seasons. They were 16 games unbeaten, and I don't really think many gave us a hope. And if I'm being really honest, I went and sat in that away and probably thinking the same, that it was a nice day out and that we were probably going to be going out. But absolutely phenomenal performance. I mean, we had some luck, didn't we? I know that there were chances for Arsenal. Olivier Giroud had a goal ruled out for offside in the first half. It was offside. So if we'd had VAR at that time, certainly would have backed up the linesman's decision. I know Mohamed Elneny, looking back at the highlights, had a couple of chances that I think a better goal-scoring player probably would have put away. But we kept in it, didn't we? And we had those two goals in the second half. The first one from Odion Ighalo, who in the second half of that season wasn't as prolific as he had been in the first half. I think the commentator says in the highlights that it was only his second goal of that calendar year. But great play from him, great hold-up play to hold the defender off and to swivel and put the ball in the back of the net. And then The second one is one that still lives with me, that Adlen Guediora rocket where you hear the ball thump off of his boot and ripple the net. I could just remember going ballistic in that away end, and you go 2-0 up at the Emirates and you think do you know what, we've got a chance here. But you just knew with the quality that they had that there was always a chance that they would get back into it. If I remember rightly, Danny Welbeck came on in that second half and he obviously got the goal that made it a nervy last few minutes. And you may remember that he also missed a really, really big chance towards the end. I think it was Alex Iwobi had a shot from the edge of the box that hit the post and rebounded off of Kostel Pantilimon, who, if you'd asked me about goalkeepers that had played for Watford under the Pozzos, I probably would have forgotten about him, because he obviously played most of his games for us in those cup competitions, didn't he? But it's kind of deflected off Pantilimon to Welbeck and he swiveled and had pretty much half an open goal and put it over the bar. And you just kind of knew at that point that it was probably going to be our day. And I just remember that final whistle going and thinking, we're going to a semi-final. Phenomenal to be in that away end. I remember it being a great atmosphere. I was there with one of my best mates who doesn't get to many Watford games. It was really nice to share that experience with him, knowing that a few other friends were in the crowd as well. It was a big day for us. And I think, as I said, Arsenal were a team in form, especially in the FA Cup. Two previous seasons, they'd won it, 16 games unbeaten. And it was little old Watford that went to the Emirates and ended that run. So brilliant day, brilliant moment for the FA Cup. Love the competition.
A lot of these stories come from when we were almost, but sometimes we were the giant killer. Strangely, and not in a very Watford-y way, sometimes we can be the giant that is killed. In fact, the last time Watford played at Vicarage Road in the FA Cup was this game. It's Adam Drury's choice as, well, not Nessie's favourite.
Certainly the most bizarre FA Cup tie I've ever seen Watford involved in, and one of the most bizarre cup ties Watford have been involved in their history, surely, is the third round tie at Tranmere in 2020. In hindsight, this tie takes on an even more end of days feel, because even though we didn't know it at the time, a couple of months later there was no football in England being played because of the COVID pandemic. That kind of sums up how I remember this cup tie. The scenarios in both instances kind of match up, because this was just very, very strange, an unusual set of circumstances, and also the existential crisis I felt during extra time up at Prenton Park, 10 p.m. on a Thursday night, thinking about what time I'm going to get home when I've got work in the morning. Yeah, there are some similarities between the two, maybe. The first game was a 3-3 draw at Vicarage Road, and actually the first half of the 4+ halves of football across the tie was probably the most straightforward. We were 3-0 up. There were some young players in the team. Nigel Pearson had been very clear that this wasn't a priority, but the fringe players who came in were doing okay. Nathaniel Shalabar scored. We seemed to be on our way to a comfortable victory. But in the second half, I think Tranmere sensed blood and we had a lot of young players on the pitch. There were 5 debutants in the team. João Pedro was among them. Daniel Backman was among them. But also players who haven't gone on to sustain a career at Watford. And I think Tranmere could tell in the second half that if they got one, they might have us on the ropes. And that is exactly what happened. And they ended up coming back to 3-3. I remember the Tranmere fans were very, very noisy. And there were a lot of them that day. They filled the Vicarage Road stand. I think when they forced the replay, they probably sensed that this was an opportunity to take a Premier League scalp. It was meant to be played 10 days later on the Tuesday, but due to weather conditions, I think a waterlogged pitch, it could have been a frozen pitch, that game was called off. And Watford were offered the chance to play the replay on the fourth round weekend, which was, I think, another 10 or 11 days later. But instead, they'd rather squeeze it onto the following Thursday night, 2 days after a massive league game at Aston Villa, just in case they won, so that they could play the fourth round game on the proper fourth round weekend, and so that there wasn't a massive fixture pile up. And that was probably a nod to how they felt about this tie. If they'd been really serious about winning it, they'd have given themselves a little bit more of a breather after the league game. But instead they said, no, Thursday night, we'll get it done. And that meant that travelling Watford fans like myself with tickets for the Villa and the Tranmere game were on the road twice in 3 days. And I remember weighing up the value of really making the trip up to Prenton Park for this replay, which was going to be a Watford B team, truthfully, at best. It's one of those nights which you'd probably regret not going to. It's a ground I hadn't seen Watford play at. There was a novelty feel about it, so I thought, why not? Drove up there. Remember the weather, again, being a bit of an issue. It was a very, very foggy night, and getting into the stand, and I couldn't really see the goal at the other end, and thinking, we're surely not going through this again, where we're all going home and coming back next week. Not sure I would have managed another trip up there. But the game did go ahead. It was an even more inexperienced Watford team from what I remember. There were 5 more debuts alongside the 5 who had made their debut in the first game. João Pedro made his first start for Watford, and I do remember thinking, what on earth must he be making of this? It wasn't the João Pedro we know now, or we even knew at Watford last year, the bulked out, fully fledged version. It was a wiry João Pedro who'd just come over from Brazil and probably wasn't used to playing in these kind of circumstances on a rock-hard pitch, foggy night, freezing cold. I think by no means was he one of the worst performers, but he didn't really make an impact on the game. We did have senior players playing. Christian Cavaselli played, Jose Holobas played. Andre Gray, I think, might have captained us. And I do remember one of his kickoffs after, it might have been during extra time, or one of Tranmere's goals went viral on social media over the next day or two because he kind of scuffed his own kickoff and ended up passing it again. And the referee penalised him for it, which probably summed up, to be honest, his contribution towards that tie, which was negligible considering he played, I think, every single minute of it and didn't do very much. Unfortunately, the young team we put out that night just wasn't good enough to compete the way we would like. Tranmere took the lead. We did score an equaliser in the second half. Caelan Hines, who was one of the debutants, scored and probably made himself one of the most obscure Watford goal scorers I can ever remember. But it did feel throughout that Tranmere were going to be the team that ultimately had the experience, the know-how, the endurance to win it. And in extra time, I think it was Paul Mullin, who's now at Wrexham, become a star at Wrexham over the last couple of years, scored the winner from the penalty spot in extra time, and that was us beaten. We've had some pretty strange days as Watford fans over the last decade or so, but in terms of an actual game of football and the way it played out and the circumstances around it, this is pretty much as bizarre as it gets, I think. The Thursday night, the dynamic in the team in terms of the experienced players and the young players who never played for us again. Just one of those strange memories, maybe the kind of memory that only the FA Cup can throw up.
QPR, Sunday, midday, Michael, on the big TV.
Yeah.
Opportunity to, do you think, to... not cement, but to
kick on.
To kick on. I suppose when you say kick on, Ollie Wick and I were also discussing how many games it take to be a cup run. But in terms of to kick on or to take another step forward, at least from where we've sort of found ourselves over the New Year and Christmas, this is a good chance to do it, isn't it?
It really is. Yeah, I mean, It's always got a slight Derby Day feel to it, hasn't it? Both sets of fans desperately want to beat the other. Perhaps the 12 o'clock on a Sunday kickoff negates that ever so slightly. Everyone's always a little bit sleepy for those games, regardless of what it is. It's always got that different feel to it. Whether that will suit QPR more than us, we have to wait and see. But there's absolutely no denying that there's an opportunity there. QPR were 2-0 up against Bournemouth today and thrown it away to lose 3-2. They're struggling for goals. They're still very, very much in the relegation battle in the bottom three after that dreadful start under Gareth Ainsworth. Lyndon Dykes can't score goals. I think Ilias Chair is injured or suspended.
Is he? Oh, that's because he'd started to play well. Their new manager bounced, didn't they? And they sort of won a few games. Started looking like they might get out of trouble, and I think Chair had been quite inspirational in that run, but if he's now injured, if he wasn't injured, he'd probably be going to AFCON, wouldn't he, with Morocco? Yeah. I don't know.
I've probably jinxed it, and he'll probably turn up and score a bloody hat trick now. But yeah, look, you're right, John. There's absolutely no sidestepping it. We can't sort of be coy about it. QPR are having an absolute shocking season. They're not in great form, and Watford's away form is excellent. We've done what we set out to do in this cup game in terms of keeping that momentum going. They've dug it out. They'll probably need to do the same again against QPR. But your phrase is a chance, an opportunity is absolutely right, and we shouldn't shy away from it. And we should go to Loftus Road, hopeful of a decent performance.
We shall see. Always quite a big thing, Jason QPR. I know one of Florence's, Mike's daughter Florence, were her close friends. He's a QPR fan. Eli's a coach for his Sunday team. He's a QPR fan.
Yeah.
It's always got a bit more to it, that game. Even though it's not it's sort of a local, but there's a bit more to it.
There is. One of my former bosses was a QPR fan, and I've still got a couple of mates at work that are QPR fans. When they beat us last season, which I think was their only home win for about 10 years last year, they all came to see me on a Monday morning. It was, don't normally come up to see the IT boys. What's wrong with this? Oh, of course. when we beat them 4-0 at Vicky Road Road, I took great pleasure in going down to see them, of course, on the Monday morning. So there's always that. Yeah, there's always something there. I think you get a few QPR fans around this way as well. Yep. Sort of guys that sort of lived, and this, I think, there is a sort of bit of a story behind it. I think you have sort of guys that lived around that part that moved out of London after the war, sort of into sort of new build places like South Oxy, and sort of, and there are other places as well where sort of brought their families up, kept the QPR sort of supporting genes, and so you've got a few dotted around. I think that's why we see quite a lot around the area.
Yeah. Fingers crossed, and hopefully Tom, Eli's coach, will be going for an early kickoff for Eli next Sunday, so we get back in time for lunchtime. Thank you very much for listening. Thanks to everybody who contributed to the FA Cup memories: Andy Lewis, Kevin Affleck, Stuart Hutchinson, Ollie Wicken, Colin, Kieran,
me.
You too. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Cousin John, well done, John.
Adam Drury as well. I think I've got everybody there. I can't remember. But it was great hearing all those stories and just how important and how memorable, you know, the FA Cup can link you to certain things. And it sticks longer in the memory.
Yeah. And now the great thing is we've got a chance for another one because we're in the hat. And also, credit where it's due, 15,000 there today, and yes, 4,000 in Chesterfield, but we've seen some pretty tired old attendances in the for these sort of games in the past. So fair play for Watford fans for coming out, making a decent atmosphere. It's good to see a full-ish Vicarage Road. 15,000 isn't full, I know, before you start screaming at your device, whatever you're listening for. 15,000 is decent for a home tie against a non-league side, so that was really pleasing to see. Great to see us take the cup seriously. Great to see us dig in and get through. Hopefully they learn the lessons, because they have to learn lessons if they're going to keep moving forward this season. Sunday's massive. Let's get a win and keep things moving. Come on, you Goldens.
Come on, you Goldens. Thank you very much, Jason.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
Cheers, pal.
And we'll be back with more from the Rook End very soon. Come on, you Goldens.